Welcome to the Reinvest Podcast, a podcast that is based on building confidence for you to manage your personal finances and the ministry finances that you've been entrusted with.
Welcome back to the Reinvest Podcast. I'm joined today with Don Matchett, who is Director of Development for IM Inc., and Eric Thompson, who is the editing director for One Magazine. And both of these guys are actually very active in Free Will Baptist as well as in their local congregations. But today I have them joining me to talk through a couple of topics that we don't really talk about a whole lot in our family life and stuff like that, but it's a type of reality that most Americans will face, and that is talking about how the generational sandwich has kind of come about in the American culture and how it is a way of life. In a recent study done by Pew Research, it says that 23% of all U.S. adults are a part of the generation sandwich now. Generation sandwich basically means that you are the generation sandwiched between taking care of older adults, your parents, your family members that are the generation before you, but you also have kids that you're taking care of financially as well. And talking a little bit about that financial strain that puts you in. In the survey that they did, they saw that over 50% of 40-year-olds, so if you're in that 40-year-old generation, you will be part of that generational sandwich, and that the longer that you live, the how that sandwich changes from having young kids in the house under 18 that you're still taking care of to getting into those 20 to even 30-year-old generations to where you're helping your adult kids financially as well, and how that kind of puts a strain on things. And in that Pew research, they also researched a bit back into 2014 to see like how that kind of has changed, and it's actually held quite consistent over the years of like what percentage of the population is taking care of older adults and stuff. And so in my mind, that makes it seem very much like a way of life more so than just a situation that we get in. And so what we're going to talk about today is just, you know, how that has affected the culture and kind of how that needs to play into our overall financial thinking when it comes to doing our budgets and kind of playing into that kind of budgeting outlook. Because when we're budgeting and stuff, we're not just budgeting for a year. We're budgeting for years to come down the road, and we just want to make sure that we're doing a very good job in kind of looking at it full picture. So have you guys seen generational sandwich? Have you guys been in generational sandwich? Just kind of give me your thoughts on what it is, and we'll just kind of walk through, you know, how it affects us.
Well, concerning parents, I think my situation may be a little bit different because both my parents, they passed away relatively young. But there were some things that, you know, they, my dad was a Free Will Baptist pastor, so he didn't do a lot of planning financially, if you know what I mean. So there were some things that we helped with. In fact, for example, my mother's burial, I don't think most people don't think about things like that, but my mother's burial, she had nothing. I mean, she didn't have any money when she passed away. There was no savings. And so my siblings and I pretty much, we bared the burden to take care of burial. So
I think that's a more common than you would think, especially with pastors. I know several pastors that have gotten in that situation where the kids have kind of stepped up to take care of the surviving spouse, and kind of how that has played out into where it's like how it's going to fall to each one of them stuff, and which one is more capable of caring for that parent and stuff like that, and then how the other ones kind of join in on that stuff. But that is, again, that causes a whole nother realm of communication and things that you need to do with your siblings and all that kind of stuff. And if you had a plan beforehand, it makes it a little bit smoother to be like, we kind of know this is happening, but you know, sometimes you don't have a plan and it just happens and stuff. And so, but yeah, I think that's more common than you think.
I think it's one of those things we don't really want to talk about, you know, the burial of our parents. But I will say, with my father, who was in the same financial position, my grandmother, believe it or not, who was 80 something years old at the time, she had the foresight of buying a life insurance policy, which took care of my father's burial. So, I mean, sometimes that's things we have to think about that we don't really want to.
Yeah. I think my situation was a little bit different, John. First of all, I was a late baby, kind of a miracle baby, if you will. And so my parents were already well into retirement age as my daughter was a teenager. And although my dad was a bivocational pastor, he was very successful on the side. And I did real estate and made some investments in real estate over the years. So the finances were there. That was never the issue. The issue for us was more the physical needs that had to be met for them. And I travel with my job. I travel frequently. And so there were some things that we had to discuss. And I think that was a key that you hit on. We need to talk about these things. The conversations are not easy. But we talked about how I could best meet their needs physically. I also talked with them very openly about their finances, about how to plan for the time when they would pass from the scene, how we could best preserve their financial assets without losing it. And of course, they were very careful in all of their estate planning. And sadly, last October, I lost my dad. And I was so thankful we had done all of that because it was essentially one signature and a quick call to the Social Security office. And that's all my mom had to worry about. That was it.
And we see, especially at the office, we see where parents don't talk to their kids. They don't have those conversations. And so when something happens to the parents and it's like, it's a mad scramble to be like, did dad have this? Did mom have this? Their spouse has just passed away. And so they don't really want to be the one having to dig through and find all that kind of stuff. And if the kids can say, we've talked about this, we know the plan and all that kind of stuff, it just makes things so much easier. But I think that it's very interesting that you and your parents had financial conversations before, like well before. And I wonder if that is because you were a later baby, that they felt more comfortable of talking through that kind of stuff. I know that as my parents have gotten older, they've gotten more open about talking about their financial stuff, whereas whenever they were younger, they wouldn't. And I mean, when I say younger, I mean like the last 10 years, they wouldn't talk about it and stuff. And, you know, their son had a master's degree in finance, and they still wouldn't talk to me about their financial stuff. So, you know, it's just been in the last little bit. And so I wonder if that's something that comes with age as they're starting to see, you know, the end of their life cycle, that it's like, this is kind of where, this is what we need to do. We need to take care of this stuff.
Can I come back to that very quickly? One of the things that in that sandwich role that I felt particularly strongly about was making sure that my daughter had an opportunity to talk to her grandparents, because they have been successful with their money and they were being open. They had reached that stage in life where they were open. And so I tried to facilitate where they could come together, and she was able to listen to those years of accumulated wisdom. And they were able to talk to her about, you know, savings and planning and all of those things that it's so easy to neglect in conversation.
Well, I think that a lot of times our grandparents they play such a vital role in our lives, but grandparents don't, like, they think of it as, I need to spoil this kid. I need to do all these things that I didn't get to do with my kids because I wasn't in that position. But there is a teaching element that come from your grandparents that you don't get anywhere else, because you will listen to what your grandparents say, maybe more so than your dad or your mom would say. But you know, if your granddad said, "Hey, listen, this is what I did, and like, look at me, I'm at the end of my life, and this is how it's turned out," that carries more weight than your dad saying, "This is what you need to do. You need to listen to me." But you know, I think about that with my boys, and like, my boys are very little. Like, I've got 2 and 4. And, you know, I'm trying to have conversations with them and stuff, even at 2 and 4 years old, of, you know, this is why we're not going to buy that today. This is why you don't need that, and all that kind of stuff. But I'm trying to do it very much in a, not a because I said so, you know, but more of a, this is why we don't. And it can be very taxing at times to stop and explain that kind of stuff. But it makes a huge difference whenever you're able to sit down and explain to somebody, this is the why behind why I'm telling you no on this. And I think that applies all the way up through from when they're very small until, you know, they're young adults and out on their own for the first time. So, but you know, part of this generational sandwich is not just your parents, but it is that back end, the kids that you're raising as well. If you look at the way generationals have went, each generation has more opportunities than the last. And so the generation that's coming up now has more opportunities than we had whenever we were kids and stuff. But that also comes at a price as to how quickly things can go south if they're not prepared for the stuff that comes up. You know, when I was a kid, if you blew all your money on a car or something like that when you were just a kid, you weren't talking about, like, my first car I paid $800 for. Like, it wasn't the great car. It got me where I needed to go, but it was my car and I paid for it. But now you could not buy a car for $800. You'd be lucky to buy a very bad car for around $5,000 or $6,000. But that's very significant money when you're talking about a 16, 17-year-old. And so that usually means mom and dad have to come in and help and stuff like that to give them the kind of same opportunities that you had whenever you were a kid. But then that kind of puts a different financial burden on, if they make a mistake with the car, how do you fix that? How do you stuff? You know, if I wrecked that $800 pickup truck that I had when I was a kid, I could go out and get another one for about the same price, and it wouldn't have been that huge of a deal. But you know, nowadays it's like, it's a huge deal to try to replace a vehicle and stuff like that. And so, you know, kind of how that placed into your financial planning and what you're teaching your kids and how to be responsible for things. They can't be as loose and fast with their cash as, you know, you once could be and still be okay.
I think our raising sometimes influences how we treat our kids, you know, in our history. You're talking about $800 cars. And so that's what I lived off of. You know, you raise a little bit of money, you drive a car till it quits and you go buy another. But I think it influenced me a little bit in that I saw how much time and energy, you know, and heartache that I spent on that. So for me personally, one of the things I wanted to make sure that my kids had was a good running car that was safe, you know. So right or wrong, that's one of the things we've done is, you know, my daughter, we bought a car for her, provided that for her, for my son, who's now a senior in high school. We've provided a car for him, but it was more peace of mind, you know, because it's just, we live in a different world nowadays than it was whenever I was that age. And it just seems to take some financial responsibility off of them so they can do other things.
Yeah. So did you treat, and I doubt your kids will listen to this podcast, so you can be honest with us. Did you treat your daughter's vehicle and safety different than you did your son's, or was it very much the same?
Let me just be real transparent here. I didn't have a lot of say in this. You know, because we have an older truck, I wanted to give my son, who's a senior in high school now, my kids are 10 years apart. So that helps in some ways too, by the way. But my wife really wanted something safe, you know, so we couldn't just give my son the older truck. He ended up with a, you know, a different kind of car. But
so I know in my family, whenever we were coming up, then my mom and dad were very much like, we're going to help you get your first vehicle. We're going to help you, this kind of stuff. And so my sister, they were very keen on, you know, making sure she had a nice, good car with low miles and all this kind of stuff. And whenever I got up there, I was like, well, I found this truck for $800. And my dad was like, well, you can get it if you want to. And so it was very different as to, you know, we need Sabrina to have a very safe car. John, you're fine. You can drive whatever. And so, you know, breakdowns, stuff like that. It was all part of learning how to be a, you know, young adult. So,
well,
so.
John, let me just tell you my first car, and you'll understand where I'm coming from. My first car was a 74 Pinto station wagon that had not exploded yet.
One of the rare ones.
Yeah. One of those rare ones. And, you know, my dad allowed me to buy that for $400. The motor was in the back of it, you know, and we put the motor together to make it run. And, you know, in some ways, I think that, that there's nothing wrong with that either. Yeah. I think that's pretty endearing as well.
Yeah.
Let me back up very quickly and say, I think the best way to teach kids anything is to model it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I think before you start teaching them about how to buy a car or helping them buy a car, you live it out in front of them.
Right.
And I get that from my parents. This is not something I've come up, magical thing I've come up with, but my mom and dad always drove, the least amount of car that they could have that was reliable and then lived in the nicest house. And that was a financial principle that stuck with me. And so I passed it on to my daughter. I told her that, also taught her to save and to pay cash for her cars. Right. And so when it came time for her to buy cars, I told her, start saving, and every dollar that you save, I'll match. And going back to the treating your daughter and son differently, I just had a daughter, so I treated her like, not like a son, but before she could get her driver's license, she had to change the oil, change the brakes, and change out spark plugs, and change a flat tire. And she did those things, and she can still do those things. Not that she would, you know, she doesn't have to, she has a dad right. And now a husband who would gladly do that for her, but she knows how.
Right.
And I thought all of those things, you know, it's part of that bigger picture. But I do think it's very tempting, to want to give our kids things that we might not have had when they're really valuable lessons to not having things.
Right.
And having to work through the hardship of earning them and saving for them, because those teach the longer principles.
There's a difference in value whenever it comes to something you've worked for and you've earned versus somebody just handing it to you. And I walk that line very carefully, because grace is given to us. We don't earn it. And so I understand that. But when it comes to like things on this earth, whenever you've put sweat equity into, you know, acquiring this or having this thing, then it causes it to look different in our eyes. You know, my little $800 pickup truck that I had when I was a kid, like, it was valuable to me because it was one I did and nobody helped me do it. And, you know, that's right. And so, but, you know, now I'm in this generation to where my parents are getting older and they're going to start needing financial assistance as they continue to age, or they're going to need maybe not financial assistance, but physical assistance as they get older. And then I've still got young kids, and me and my wife started late with kids. And so I'll be retirement age by the time they get out of the house. And so then they'll have to help me. I need to train them up very well so that they're ready to help take care of me whenever I get there. But it is a different... It is a different aspect to look at kind of how we're how we're focusing on, you know, where we're putting dollars and what we're preparing for. Because I know at some point in time, I'm gonna have to care for my parents, whether it be financially, physically, you know, are they gonna have to come live with us or whatever. And so we're making financial decisions today, even though none of that stuff has happened to us. We just know that it's a possibility in the future. We also know that it could be a possibility for my wife's parents. And so that's two sets of parents that you kind of have to play with. And, you know, we've even played with the thought of, what if we get both? What if we get both parents that we need to take care of? And so we've got one on her side, and we can't, you know, do you bring them both into the house? Do you have to have a spare house? You know, how do you kind of how to approach that? And so those are the things we're talking about now, even though that's way off in the future. It's not happening yet, but we're planning for it now. And so, but we also have small kids that are going to be around for another, you know, years and years and years. And so, and if they continue on the path that is trending now with Generation Z and even Alpha that's coming up next, then it's like the model of becoming 18 and getting out of the house is kind of left. Now it's like they might be 28 before they leave the house. And so you're kind of extending that timeline of how long they're under your roof and kind of how that kind of plays out.
Let me circle back. One of the other things that we decided early on, going back to the cars, and John, I'll put this to you in a question. You can tell me whether I've done well or not. Okay. But we made a conscious decision with our kids to invest in a car that would be dependable, that would get them back and forth to college. That was the primary purpose behind that. But we also told our kids early on, if you want to go to college, you have to make that happen. Someone instilled that in me a long time ago, said that, you know, this is a large investment, and it's an investment that your kids need to pay for. You know, we're going to be in retirement and all those things and won't be able to really invest in them. So we've kind of held to that. And so far it's worked out. My daughter's, you know, she's 28, worked out pretty good for her. Now our son, we're kind of holding the same principles.
Yeah. So as far as your question as to which is the better option, or is that a good option?
Well, more or less the question I'm asking is, rather than pay for your kids' college, is it better for your kids to make sure they pay for their own college?
Well, so again, I think that all comes back to principles that you've taught your kids as they're growing up. If mom and dad have always been, anything you want, I'm going to get for you, and then all of a sudden when they get to college, it's, nope, you have to pay for this, they're probably not going to transition to that well. If it's something that you're like, if you want that, you can get it, but I'm going to help you do that. And as they get older, you keep taking away some of that, not taking away, but you just help less than what you did whenever. Like my boys are 4 and 2. I provide everything for them, their wants, their desires. I may say no if it's something that I'm like, no, that's not a priority for us, because I'm at that point in time, I'm teaching them priorities. As they get older and they start getting to the point to where they can accumulate income for themselves, whether it's working odd jobs or if you do chores at the house and you pay them for that, or however your family system functions, then you start saying, well, since you're doing this, then we're going to take away some of the assistance that we're giving you, and we're letting you learn to stand on your own feet. In the first 5 years that a kid is out on their own, they're going to make probably 80% of the financial decisions that will follow them for the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. They'll decide where they're going to go to college. If they're going to go to college, they're most likely, and it's kind of expanded out now to about 10 years after they leave the house of when they get married. So who their spouse is going to be, they're going to buy a house, cars, all these things that have long-term implications on debt and stuff like that. If you have done everything for your kid to that point and you say, now you're on your own, they're going to continue the cycle of having large debt loads and stuff like that. And so as far as paying for one, paying for the other, I think the teaching as to how you're doing it up to that point is what makes the difference in that kind of stuff.
I will say one of the things that was implemented early on in my parents' training was this, the 70-20-10, where you spend 70 living, save 20, tithe 10. Just a basic core principle that came from my grandmother or my grandfather. I'm not sure which one. But anyway, they had me apply that as I was a kid earning money, side jobs. I spent some of it, but they had me put back up until I went to college at least 50% of every penny I made. And I started working at 14. I started chopping wood at a barbecue place at age 14. And 50% of everything I made went toward college. And the neat thing was when I got to college, then they were able to say, look, we have this amount of money saved. You can either go to college. You have the money, you can go to work. The options are there. But you've made this amount. And if you choose to go to college, then we will pay for the difference between what you've made. But then they required me to continue working through college.
Right.
And I worked at least 20 hours a week all the way through school. And it made me really appreciate my education. And yet I also felt empowered in that because I'd been part of it. You know, I felt like I had earned, it still didn't help with 8 o'clock classes. I really could have cared less at the 8 o'clock classes, and apologies to my professors for the times they had to wake me up, but it did make me appreciate the schooling. We didn't do quite that much with my daughter. We did make her save. And especially in her high school years as she worked, she put back significant amounts of money. And then she had several scholarships. And then we had been saving. We started before she was even born, saving money toward college. And then we said, here's what we're going to do. This is the amount of money we have. This is the amount of money you have. Once that money runs out, then you're on your own. So a little same idea, mm-hmm. Don, but a little different approach in that. And interestingly, she earned her associate's degree and then chose to go to work rather than go on for her BABS right away. She will come back to that, but she didn't want to start life in debt. And right. The thing is, she was thinking that through.
Right.
And that's what we wanted.
Definitely something that we all think about is not starting off in debt. But I think you guys, both of you, have touched on something I think is important because, you know, something is much more valuable if you're invested than it is if it's given to you.
Yeah.
So I think that's a valuable lesson for all of us.
Yeah. So coming back to, you know, the generational sandwich as we started with, you know, how can you see how that affects you guys on a day-to-day basis now, knowing that you got, you know, parents that are older or relatives that are older that you're going to have to step in with to help either physically, financially, or whatever, and you still have kids at home or kids that are in your, I don't guess it actually ever changes that even if they're out of your house for 20 years, they're still your kids, and kind of how that, and then kind of what kind of guiding principles would you say, you know, Eric touched on, you know, we save this amount, you save this amount, this is how much you have. What kind of guardrails have you put up to be able to say, this is kind of what we're looking at in the future. This is where we know we're past where we can feasibly help. And kind of how are you approaching, you know, that kind of stuff moving forward?
Well, first, let's talk about the top end of the sandwich. Things have certainly changed since my dad passed. And mom, again, the finances are not an issue, but she has more things that she needs me to do, and I need to be around for her more, and there are more responsibilities there. One of the big things has been to budget my time. Just like we budget finances. Mm-hmm. You know, she and I talk in advance about things that are needing to be done, and we have a plan, and we may schedule a Saturday so many weeks out where I come over and I really get at it and get things done. But I've also had to say, you know, there will be times when I can't, And that's, boy, that's hard to tell your mom.
Right.
But the reality is my job hasn't changed. My family responsibilities those things haven't changed for me. So I've had to learn a new normal, as we call it. But as far as kids go, I'm very blessed. My daughter and her husband they're both employed. They're church planners, but they also work. They're bivocational church planners. They work jobs on the side. They save well. They're paying their bills. They have not asked us for a lot of things. We did talk very openly with them early in their marriage, and we said we don't believe in co-signing. We just don't. We will not be on a long-term loan with you as co-signees. And I know I've had some people really get after me about that. How are you doing that to your kids? And I say, well, here's the deal. I'll give them money when they put out the effort and they're getting ready to make purchases, and then I'll join them in that purchase. But I'm not going to co-sign because I believe that's biblical. And I know that's a tough conversation because, again, it's so much easier. Oh, because that's my little girl.
Right.
Now she's married and gone from my house, but I still think of her as my little girl and always will. And I would just want to hand it to her. That's not the best thing.
Right.
Always.
And I think the co-signing stuff, like it happened in the past, but man, when the housing market exploded, you know, after probably about 2013 forward is when the housing market, especially here in Nashville, exploded. Then it was like you'd hear mom and dad taking out second mortgage on their house to be able to pay cash for their kids' homes. And I mean, just crazy stuff like that to where, you know, that gets to be a bit more than I think is what's responsible for, you know, the development of your kids and stuff. And if you were in that boat and you did that there's nothing that I'm saying like you did it wrong or whatever stuff. I just don't think that's the best. It's not putting you in the financial position that you'll need to be. And so you're just kind of creating a cycle that now your kids are going to have to step up to help you because you helped them kind of stuff. And so it's kind of passing that back and forth. Whereas if you had a little bit more of a, no, listen, you can rent or you can do this, or I will help you, but I'm not going to, you know, take out this massive debt load on myself, kind of help them to kind of stand on their own two feet a little bit and be able to build that credibility and stuff within.
Well, and I do think, it's important for kids to understand, you know, we should be as older adults, we should be at a little different stage in life. If mm-hmm. we've been careful financially, they should know that we're there, not that we're handing them everything,
right?
But that if a true emergency happened, that we would have the wherewithal to help them.
Right.
Well, we're talking about the sandwich here, you know, parents and kids. I think from my perspective, I had on the top end, as we've been talking about, I think I had two different experiences. One was my parents who, you know, it was difficult. It was extremely difficult. It was, you know, financial issues, the emotional part, trying to help them every way we can. But ironically, what Eric was talking about, that day-to-day support where you're walking alongside, you know, that was my grandparents for me. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot greater help pool, if that's the correct word, of people that come around. We all helped with my grandparents. But it's a totally different experience because they were financially prepared. You know, they had everything in a trust. They were ready whenever things, you know, come to close of their life. Everything just took, it just kind of happened the way that they wanted to. So it just made me learn. I wish that we had had those conversations with my parents, even though they died young. I wish we'd had those conversations with them. And that way, you know, it'd have been easier for them. It'd have been easier for us and all that. Just learned a good lesson. My daughter on the other side of that sandwich, she's the one that's out of the house. She lives 6 hours away. But honestly, we have to prod, you know, how can we help you guys? Because they're very self-sufficient and they take pride in that. And it gives me pride that they do that. But, you know, they take care of themselves.
Thank you for listening to the Reinvest Podcast. For more information, please visit our website at reinvestfwb.com. Please subscribe to the Reinvest Podcast through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and more.